So for today's episode on NOTG Banter, let's welcome Joanne.
No!
You're all, take it away. Give her a welcome.
This is our resident Joanne Low. She says she will self-introduce herself. So let's go.
Hi, I'm Joanne.
No!
Introduce yourself, Lan.
I've introduced myself.
Okay, what do you do? Song. How are you? Are you married? Where do you stay? What you like to eat?
Ages.
What kind of seafood you like to eat? Why you don't like to eat chicken?
Those are personal questions. We can do another session.
Getting
yesterday we just ate 大闸蟹.
AMA with Joanne Low.
Grace, yeah. Can you share with Joanne how to eat 大闸蟹?
First, you need to peel off the legs.
Yesterday I had a 10-minute lesson on how to
twist
eat 大闸蟹.
All eight legs.
It was so good.
Oh yeah, it's quite. I've never tried this technique before, but you should. Break the bottom, then you use the sharp part and poke. The flesh really comes out.
Yeah. What happened to your voice?
I sang too much. Sang too much karaoke.
You wrong, this is why he left the shoot earlier.
Yeah, we have to go to a client who invited us to eat a 10-course dinner.
Yes, really.
And then bring us to sing karaoke at their basement.
Yeah.
So that's the reason you left me in the studio to do the recording myself.
Yes, we have to leave you. We ended at 11:30 PM. Yeah. I have to go to meet Wayne to collect my laptop.
Okay, so pardon my voice.
How come the client never invite me to eat 大闸蟹?
Oof.
I don't know.
Okay, next time we'll bring you NOTG, let's have some 大闸蟹.
Okay, come. So today we're going to talk about a few couple of very interesting news before we end the year for 2023. So welcome on our NOTG banter. When was the last time we had a banter? Okay. Let's answer some questions first, all right? So we have of course a lot of questions on our NOTG YouTube comments. I want to thank you for all the comments that you wrote in. Okay, we have some questions that maybe we're gonna take like 2 to 3 questions today to talk about certain topics. One will be, maybe let's look at this first question first. Maybe you won't take this away.
Okay, so the question is, the market, more like a comment. So the market is based on collective prosperity. When Singapore and the world prospers, there is more demand, hence prices climb up and it becomes seller's market. Conversely, if the news is about job loss and more job cuts to come, many people will be too fearful to leverage and commit a big purchase. You get a lot of examples of fake good news to rekindle FOMO, but it don't seem to illustrate the risk of job cuts as well as recession splashing all over the papers. What if the stock market crashes 30%? There is a new crisis?
This should be in response to one of the latest banter episode or perhaps my personal episode. So by the way, we don't give fake good news because we also always share about what are the things that people should not touch in certain seasons. So if you follow our webinars and all that, there are a lot of things that we advise our audiences not to touch. And we also personally don't touch. So one of the key reasons before I pass to Yu Rong is that Singapore is very different. 16 rounds of cooling measures. But the most important thing is that our population is still increasing. Our land is very limited in terms of quantity. Our amount of residential stock is very limited. But the most powerful thing is that we have 90% home ownership rate, which means that people don't sell their properties easily. It's usually the last thing they will do. Because example, if somebody were to lose their job, if they become single income, if both spouses will lose their job, they might liquidate their stocks first. The most liquid assets will be liquidated. Then the last one, because it's a roof over their head, it's a shelter. And of course, if you look at Maslow hierarchy of needs, right? Shelter is the most foundational kind of needs that people will try to preserve first. So there's also a lot of instances that even if let's say somebody were to lose their job overnight and they cannot get a replacement job in 12 to 24 months, they can, of course, resort to new creative ways of increasing their liquidity and cash flow in their families by renting out their rooms as well. So I think because of the fact that we're 90% home ownership rate, it's very different from other countries that you would just like try to sell your property very hastily, even if let's say you are in a very downcast situation. So I think about committing to a big purchase is that firstly, most Singaporeans have one property. The second one is usually done when they have more liquidity and confidence. And second one is not done easily because either you will be hit with ABSD, you need to take a lower loan because you have already committed to an existing mortgage, and you have to pay stamp duty, you have to hold for at least 3 years. So all these things add up together. I think Singaporeans are actually very prudent. So, Yuron, what do you think?
Thanks for answering the question, Melvin.
I didn't answer all, okay?
Okay.
You become a lecturer.
Okay, generally, I think for me, I see it more from the fundamental basis. So I think like this is definitely a very valid way to look at the market. It is, of course, you know, like especially now that our prices have peaked in the property market, it is, of course, there will be a lot of fears regarding whether we have peaked and whether this is going to the next cycle and whether we will be coming to a bear market for the property cycle, especially like what I mentioned, you know, and more recession talks for the last 2 years, whether there will be another crisis that comes along or like we have a lot of like things like interest rate hikes as well. So general thinking is this, number one, is that like we see from a fundamental perspective, right, is that we want to see whether is Singapore even a viable place to own asset first. So if you think of it, in the entire world, I would say that Singapore is, I would say, classified by a lot of governments that like it is one of the best run countries. So think of it as a business. When the business is well run, then of course it means that the long-term pricing of the stock will go up. So because Singapore is well run, well managed, one single government for the last 50 years, our plans can be long-term planning. And most importantly is that we continue to transform and continue to develop. So if you are a foreigner, every 3 years you come to Singapore, you realize that something has changed. Because how we're going to bring in revenue to the country is mainly a lot of like tourism, a lot of like financial institution. And of course, because we are mainly based on human capital, we need to make sure that we go onto the higher value chain with regards to productivity. So we are trying to go to like digital jobs, AI, because this is where we can differentiate, because we cannot compete based on cheap as compared to other labor forces in other countries. So hence, in general, Singapore is well run. So because Singapore is well run, so hence the land becomes valuable. And in contrast, not maybe it's not the word contrast, but so basically in connection, the property prices that sit on this very rare land, right, will have continued to have upward movement. So we are talking about general market is going up. So number one, if we understand that land is going to become more valuable, it makes sense to own real estate in Singapore. So if once you understand this concept, right, then it doesn't really matter so much on cycles, because we all look at cycles. Where will be the next down cycle so that I can come in and make the most money? But the question is, what if the down cycle never comes? So if you look at our real estate price index, the last time that there was like a down cycle, that was in 2013, because of a policy restructuring where we implemented total debt servicing ratio, the volume of transaction was cut by 50% and prices went down 12% over a 4-year period. So essentially, it flushed out all the weak market. And after that, no other global financial crisis has sort of like bring down the property price index. So the last thing, of course, was COVID. So if you were to pull out the chart, Melvin, you can see that 09 or whatever crisis that happens, there will be a 30% down cut. So we have this where we compare, like let's say, you know, like in 2020 when COVID hit, we realized that cryptocurrency, US stock market, as well as the Singapore stock, all went down by 30% over, but Singapore real estate price index stays actually a positive 1.1%. Yeah, so this is the research that we have done, the previous.
Actually, I think all the more, in terms of volatility of the stock market, right? Actually, I think all the more real estate will rise, because it just proves that it's a safer haven to park your capital. So, you know, it's coming from a point of view is that the brand of Singapore is so strong, right? You're looking at the branding and positioning of Singapore in the first place as a place that people want to park their capital. I think we can also like do like a reverse kind of perspective, in the sense that if you had a chance to go and ask the US investors, the family offices, the Malaysia investors, Indonesia, China investors, and why is it that they want to invest properties, and why is it that they have already bought properties in Singapore, and why is it that our government need to increase ABSD to 60%, I think then there's a new perspective to hear from all the foreign investors, like what do they see in Singapore? Why don't they just continue to invest in other parts of the world? Why do they want to put capital in Singapore to buy real estate? Yeah, I think they can perhaps share fresher perspective, right? So how about Joanne? What do you think? Why do you think foreign investors are pouring their capital into Singapore, and that our government has to implement such a strong ABSD?
I think also through the course of history, as a nation, when we first started out independence, Singapore has also been proven as one of the rising stars within Southeast Asia itself. we are one of the nation to quickly go through industrialization and then grow very, very fast, developing into a first world kind of nation. So I think a lot of bystanders outside of Singapore, whether you are just a normal individual investor or you're just a corporate family office, I think a lot of audiences out there have also taken interest in our country and want to participate in the rise and growth of our nation itself. So real estate is one of the, not easiest, but one of the sort of most profitable way in the long run, if you're in for the long game, to actually play a part in having this participation in the Singapore's growth as well. Mm. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Yeah, Yong, any other further inputs to this question?
I haven't even
finished. Okay, yeah, continue please.
I think few key things. So basically, if you believe in the management of the Singapore country, right, so you know asset prices will go up. So in terms of long-term game, if for example, you see the amount of quarters where you have a positive price increase versus negative price increase, you realize that usually timing the market doesn't work because once you miss out one or two rising quarters, basically most of your profits are being eaten off. And so it only makes sense for you to always park yourself in good asset instead of trying to leave the market. And of course, over in PLB, we have all our different analyses to ensure that in the different seasonalities, we are actually purchasing or parking ourselves in the correct asset that will see additional demand in 3 to 4 years' time so that we are prepping ourselves that when the demand comes in, then it can actually have the price growth. I would say the other thing is if you look at the entire household net worth in Singapore, let's say in 2023 Q1, you realize that out of the entire household net worth, the amount, about half of the net worth actually is parked in properties. And about, I would say, 20% is in CPF. Another 12% is around shares and securities. And of course, 20% is in cash. So you can see that overall, Singapore's net worth, they are more comfortable to park in property. And just so it just makes sense that, you know, like you partake in where Singaporeans are comfortable to park their funds in. Next thing is, of course, we are not really depending on foreigners to come in to purchase homes to bring up the pricing. And so if you were to look at the number of foreigners and company purchases, you can see that actually over the last 2 years, let me look at the data again. Okay, so over the last 2 years, right, 93% of the private residential transactions are done by Singaporeans and PR only. And this has been the case for many years. And that is actually the best thing because when you see that the prices are going up because it is being supported by local demand, which is very, very different in other countries where you see that interest rate goes up, you realize that prices are coming down partially because of two things. The demand of foreigners are dipping because most of them, as in like not a lot of properties are being afforded by the locals. But over here, it's local demand. So even if foreigners don't come in and purchase, we still have upside for prices to go up if we are part ourselves in the correct segment. Second thing is, of course, because of all the rounds of cooling measures, we have already taken into account today, the stress test to get lending is at 4.8%, even when fixed interest rate is at 3%. So this is a very, very prudent policy making from the government. Hence, I already shared that weak hands have been flushed out from the market. And if you know how to park yourself in the correct property, you will have long-term upside.
All right. Thanks, Yong. Grace, do you personally invest in the stock market?
I have tried to.
What happened?
I've tried to, but I did it when I was like younger and I have like huge risk appetite. Yeah, so it hasn't turned out well.
What's the minimum age to open an account? 18. 18 can invest already, yeah. I didn't know.
I'm not sure.
Who is 18 years old here?
Me!
Hey Fadila, you got to invest in the stock market. How old are you?
She's 21.
Oh. Yeah. What's the legit age by MES?
I think 21. 21,
right?
21.
You 18 is the age that you're allowed to smoke, right? Or drink.
Yeah. Oh, is it 21?
Now smoking is 21. Right? Wow. Drinking? Oh. Yeah. Okay, so what happened? You stop investing already?
Yeah.
Okay. Why?
It's 18, a brokerage account is an investment tool that can be under 18, but this is maybe not like a Singapore context.
Okay, because I mean, in the past, I like to buy those very
bullish stock.
Yes. Like, you know, very volatile. Then I'll try to buy. Then I'll try to time the market. But I realized that it's really like an art and a science. You have to like really invest time into it and study, which I didn't have. So I decided to just cut my losses and just take out everything. Yeah.
Okay. This year was awesome. The stock market.
Yeah, everything rolls, right?
Apple, let's go.
Apple? Ah?
Yeah, I made some money in Apple.
Awesome.
Do y'all invest mainly in overseas or Singapore?
Only US stock market.
Only
no
US,
Singapore stock market.
No Singapore.
This have you heard of this thing called the volume effect? Because Singapore stock market has no volume effect.
There's okay,
no
I think it depends if you're in for the short term or long term.
No, if you want dividend play, I think Singapore stocks are great. Yeah. But if you want growth play, then probably like US stock with volume effect.
Because there's
effect,
a lot of volatility also. US.
Yes, definitely. Do you invest?
Yeah.
Oh, where?
But I mainly do Singapore stocks.
China?
Oh,
China?
Wow, you're a Singapore girl.
Yeah. Huh?
REITs?
No. Like blue chip.
Ah.
Oh.
Dividend.
She's a dividend investor.
Blue?
But I bought like long time ago. So I also have capital gains also.
Oh.
But I haven't realized.
Wow. Sitting on margins.
But I mean, there were losses also lah, because I bought penny stocks as well.
No wonder you're confident. No, when you're sitting on paper gain, you're always confident. You're like,
but I've never tried US market yet.
Oh, don't
fantastic
try.
Fantastic.
It's very volatile.
Fantastic. Don't
have a look
try
at this. Also pretty interesting, right? I mean, because is it because like Singaporeans are also very prudent that no household debt drops to lowest because like high interest rate and stuff like that? And if you look at the latest statistics that we had in terms of this one, it was the webinar that we just did recently. Have a look at this. Like household wealth, it rose. Median household income also rose. So I think it seems that Singapore is now at a stage that we are quite like really the financial hub of Asia. So I think we are really in a very different season. So Joanne, why don't you talk about this particular question that we had from our audiences?
Okay, wait. One thing to add on for Yurong's question also, right? I mean, it's not saying that just because Singapore is a safe haven or that, you know, okay, there's also like articles and charts that says that we are in the bottom percentile for risk of a housing bubble, right? But just because that's the case doesn't mean that in every season that there's like every product can buy.
Yeah.
So in every season, there are also products that we should look at and products that we should not look at. So it's not just like, you know, because Singapore is a safe haven and all the investors are flocking here that we, you know, can buy everything in every season. There's also a season for every asset type and class. And even within the same asset class, there's also different products that we should be looking at.
So coming to the mortgage loan that you mentioned, right? So in 2000 Q1, the mortgage loan to net worth ratio is 16.9%. And in the Q1 2023 this year is 9.9%. So in terms of like the rate in terms of like the overall household net worth increase is much higher than the total residential loan that we have. Because of course in 2000 Q1, we have 96 billion of mortgage loan. Right now we have 263 billion. Just that wealth grew much faster.
Right.
Because of like, you know, like how US have been printing money. So everything is to a certain extent inflated in that sense.
Thanks, Yurong. What Grace has just mentioned is this concept we have in PRB called the pairing strategy. Because in every season there's a couple of pairings that will be the opportunity gap that we can sort of like look at and take advantage of. Of course, we don't recommend every product in every season. So for example, like this season right now in the last quarter of 2023, the red ones are the ones that we think will grow slower. The yellow ones are the ones that we think are the opportunity areas. Of course, if you want to know more, webinars are a place that we talk in depth. Through the Banter series, of course, we want to talk about more current stuff. We might not have enough time to just talk about every singular chart that we have. Let's move on to the next question. Joanne, you want to answer which one? Sorry. Is this one?
Yeah, this one.
Okay, great. Come.
So there's a comment here. I think this audience is has the opinion that for real estate, they feel that you should not pay down your debt, for HDB especially. However, for private housing, you should pay off your housing loan no matter what to reduce your effective interest rates. I think my personal opinion might differ a little bit. Two parts. The first thing is, I think in terms of property ownership, a lot of homeowners do come into the real estate market because they want to take advantage of this thing called leverage. It's not very common that you get to use leverage in a lot of investment assets. Like, hardly do people loan money to get invest in stocks, equities, bonds, and all that. Usually, they use their cash savings. But real estate, especially in Singapore's context, is one of the probably the only product that you can actually take up a loan, and banks love to incur this kind of banks basically love to loan you money if you're going for a real estate product, primarily because of the concept that real estate, they love this as a product itself, as an asset class itself. It's sturdy, it's there, it's a very hardy asset. If let's say should the sort of homeowner fail to pay down your mortgage, they can always sort of take back the property itself. That's one. I think the second thing is, to me, whether or not you should pay down your loan ultimately also depends on what you're going to do with the cash. Should you use it to pay down, or do you have other investment areas that you think might give you a better yield? If that's the case, then if the yield that you can get elsewhere is higher than the interest that you're paying to the bank, then I think it makes sense to still hold on to your loan, especially if you've really locked in at very, very low rates, and then go for other investments which you think can give you that yield. Of course, risk appetite, all those are different stories. It's very personal, but I don't think it's a sort of a extreme. It's quite extreme to say that you should pay down no matter what. So I think it's a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
But I think it makes sense to regularly sort of evaluate your portfolio and look at what are the assets that you want to do.
Right. Awesome. Thanks, John.
I think I can add on to this portion, right? I think like what this investment banker mentioned, of course, the definitely coming from one angle, it definitely like makes a lot of sense. Number one, leverage is a double-edged sword, right? So of course you can 4x your returns when you leverage, but if you happen to park in an asset that doesn't increase in value, actually it decreases in value, you actually have 4x the losses. So from that angle, if you are in a losing kind of asset class, it could make sense to pay down, and you have long-term power to continue to hold to make sure you have like a U-turn. The other thing is also, of course, I think if you are talking about back in early part of 2022, when interest rate is at 1+%, it's very easy to find alternatives to cash to get a return to cover your cost of funding, which is the 1%. So in that scenario, it's very easy to not pay down the loan. But maybe now that interest rate is at 4.2% for floating rate, 3% for fixed rates, it is a bit harder to find alternatives to cover that spread. So hence in that scenario, if you do not have alternate usage of funds, it could mean that you can pay down the loan temporarily. And next time, because if it is a private housing, you can always do a reverse, you know, like refinancing to get out the funds to do other forms of investment deployment when it's the right season, personal season for you. But of course, don't do that for HDB, like what this investment banker mentioned, because it's only a one-way street.
Yeah, anyway, I think this based on this comment, I think the very first thing that we can look at, well, anyway, thanks for the comment. It's true that HDB doesn't allow you to do equity release through refinancing, but just based on that first statement, it will mean that perhaps this investment banker is talking about the fact that for all other private housing property, because you can do refinancing, right? Then you should pay down now, reduce your effective interest rate. Then maybe in future when the interest rate reduces, then you do refinancing to take a loan again or things like that. Okay. However, there's one drawback here if you use this method, is that you might not be able to do refinancing at different seasons of your life. Because example, if your age increases, your incomes drop, or you lose your job, then you cannot retake the loan. So taking a loan from the bank in terms of mortgage is a little bit like doing a health check when you buy a life insurance. Once, you qualify for the rest of the tenure. If you take a sort of like a gamble to assume that you can always do refinancing 3, 5, 8 years later, if uncertainty happens in your life, then you lose the chance to hold that mortgage. And all your cash is stuck in the property. And the only way to release, right, is to sell. So we also have seen cases whereby clients, they are already in their 50s, they're not working anymore, zero income, they cannot take out equity. So their only choice is to sell. Second thing that basically, so just now, Joanne, you're talking about you're a dividend play investor, right? How much is your dividend?
Right now, maybe about 4%. I haven't tracked for a long time because
40,000.
Okay, anyway, T-bill 6 months already give you 4%. That can already match the interest rate for most of the property. And of course, if you stay invested with leverage, if next year or 2 years later, if interest rate comes out, you can also refinance to a lower interest rate. Alternatively, of course, I think actually all these are what all our real estate investors who own multiple properties has taught us over the years. I think just thinking about paying down mortgage to bring down effective interest rate is only 125% of the puzzle. A lot of investors actually when they tell us is that, hey, never pay down a mortgage. And these are people who own like 10 to 15 properties as well. And they are in different camps and school of thought. They will always want to invest in other assets or use dividends, like example, like Joanne, to pay down her monthly installment and things like that. So I think there are four different school of thoughts. What the investment banker is talking about is just one. So I think it's also important to understand all four perspectives. But nevertheless, we thank you for the question. Next, Grace, you want to answer this? Come, Quantum and PSF, what do you think about this?
Yeah, so I like this question because I think the question covers quite a few different concepts and aspects of property investment. So I'll read the question first. But Melvin, isn't both PSF and Quantum important? If an older flat is only 1,200 PSF for 1,200 square feet versus a new flat that is 900 square feet for only 900 square feet only for 1,007 PSF, isn't it more worth it to get the older one? Especially if it's more exclusive boutique project and freehold, which tends to be more exo. Exclusive boutique project, I think referring to the latter, which is the 900 square feet and then, you know, at 1,007 PSF versus something that is maybe older at 1,200 square feet, 1,200 PSF. So I like this question because it brings in many, many different concepts in terms of investing, right? So, you know, the person is asking about like PSF versus Quantum. They're also asking about size and about like the volume effect, the number of units in one project. And they're also asking about tenure.
I think it's referring to the older one to be boutique and freehold at lower per square feet.
I think
which tends to be more X,
because he finds that basically why not buy the older one that is 1,200 square feet, 1,200 square feet plus it's a freehold, which is and more exclusive because it's a boutique product.
Which freehold should be more X lah.
Okay. So I think either ways, right?
Actually not 99 years are more X than
actually in the market it's actually boutique freehold projects are lower cheaper. PSF than 99 years big size projects.
Yeah.
But big size freehold projects have a premium over 99 years.
Okay, sorry, Grace. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I think if we were to look at this question, either ways that it refers to, right, whichever one is the boutique, whichever is the freehold, it brings in many, many different qualities of a unit when you're looking at it. There are many points of comparison when you are looking between two projects. It could be the size, it could be the age, it could be the PSF pricing, it could be the quantum pricing as well. So to answer the question, isn't both PSF and Quantum important? I think yes. When we are looking at a specific unit, especially if we want to invest or we want to buy, even if it's for our own stay, it's important to look at various different factors, right? So we have our mode analysis, which has about 10 different factors that we look at, which are all actually also mentioned by the what do we call them? People? Questioner? Commenters, viewers, by the viewers, all the qualities mentioned by the viewers, right? So, just to share a few key main ones here, I think size is definitely something that, people should look at. So in terms of sizing, bigger units are definitely more in demand. I think because it's rarer and rarer after the, 2013 TDSR measures, developers have also started, putting a lot of smaller units. So size is something that buyers are looking for and it's something that is rarer, right? So there's less supply of it. Yeah, if you were to look at the chart after 2013, units that are, you can see a sharp increase in smaller unit types, 500 to 700 kind of square feet. And then the 1,100 and 1,300 units are a lot smaller, a lot lesser now. Yeah, so that is one. Another thing to look at, mention is like the boutique projects, right? So in terms of boutique and freehold, in the past, I think boutique and freehold projects are something that is very popular and very in demand. It's a lot more exclusive and people have the notion that freehold projects are a lot more hold their pricing a lot more. There's a 15% premium to enter freehold properties in the past, right? And I think even today to enter freehold properties, there is usually that 10 to 15% premium depending on the location. It could be more as well. Yeah. So if we were to look at a lot of projects. So just last week, at our PLB, you know, like a huddle, we also did a little experiment. We went to compare, you know, at different MRT stations. We picked out two projects, a boutique freehold project versus like mega projects in the area. So mega projects, we're looking at 400 units and above. We compared the price appreciation from 2013 to 2023. And we found that it was very interesting to see that, you know, a lot of the boutique freehold projects have not really performed as well as the 99-year project. So this can be attributed to what we call the volume effect. So the volume effect is basically measures the number of units and therefore the volume of transactions within that project, right? So if your project has 300 to 400 units versus if it has like 50 to 100 units, you can expect that there will be a lot more changing of hands. And you know, the human mindset is that every time your neighbor sells or every time you want to sell, you will take a look at what your neighbor has sold, right? So naturally, when your neighbor is selling or when you are selling, you look at their prices and then you will want to benchmark your selling price against theirs. But a bigger phenomenon that is beyond this kind of mindset is also how bankers in Singapore value your unit for sale, right? So this is done through a valuation where they look at the transaction prices, not in the whole district and comparing with other projects, but basically vis-a-vis other similar unit types within your same condo project. Yeah, so the volume effect, basically the more transactions there is within your project, then the more it pushes the pricing up as well. Yeah, so I think Melvin has put on screen two projects here that we you know, sometimes reference to understand this phenomenon as well. So Coven Melody, 99 years. In 12 years, it saw almost 500,000 in appreciation versus Coven Esquire is a freehold. And, you know, the PSF has only increased by about 100 PSF in the past 12 years, right? So the appreciation... So definitely, you know, when you look at in terms of appreciation, it's not just about freehold, boutique and all that. There's a whole combination of factors to look at. So you're absolutely right to point out that we should look at PSF. We should also look at quantum because quantum, which is another thing on the mode analysis that we think about, which is that if your quantum is a little bit too high or bridging towards the next kind of asset class or the next, let's say you're a three bidder and the pricing is a little bit too close to a four bidder, then will there be that room for appreciation for you? So yeah, I think we should look at many different factors when considering.
Lousy, bad location products are appreciating much more than all like some of the very good kind of locations.
Yeah, I think we have not shown this on LTG before.
My time at PLB. So I first joined as like an editorial writer. I can still remember at that time, we've been talking about interest rates like forever. It feels like since the day I entered PLB till now, it's like we're always talking about interest rates. So one of my first few articles are like, you know, what's the relationship between interest rates and property prices? That's like the first few things I ever wrote about.
And you're probably just COP'd. Usually, there's a different strategy that some landlords that are more veteran and experienced, they want to be the first to exit. They want to be the first landlord to be tenanted one. Then but they might only sign 1 year. Then after 1 year, once everybody stabilizes, they will renew at a higher rate or find a new tenant. Yeah. So different strategies. Yeah. What do you guys think about the rental market?